Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization this fine Thursday, September 15th, 2016. I am Catty McEwen. I'm proud to co-chair this committee, and we're delighted to be in your beautiful community today. We have spent a few hours looking around your community at your beautiful bridge, at your highway, at your byways, and talking about issues that are important in this part of the coast. Then we had the pleasure of spending about an hour and a half this afternoon having really substantive discussions with representatives from the Oregon Transportation Commission, our committee members, and members of the Local Area Commission on Transportation and local elected officials and concerned citizens. So this has been a very productive day for us. We are on our seventh meeting as we travel around the state to discuss the transportation issues that face us in the upcoming session and the prospect of putting together a transportation package to bring a bill to work on the issues that we all care deeply about in our very complex transportation system. We started off with our first meeting in Salem. We have had a committee meeting in East Portland, Ontario, Hermiston, Bend, Medford. We are here today. We will travel to Washington County. We will have another meeting in Salem, and we will wrap up with a meeting in the Albany-Corvallis area, I believe on October 24th. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, Patrick? So we will finish up there. And we're just delighted to have an opportunity to have all of this wonderful input as we make tough decisions about transportation. I'm asked to give a very specific announcement tonight. Highway 20 will close promptly at 7. They will be doing blasting tonight, so there will be no fudging of anybody going through. So if anybody has to make it through on Highway 20, please let us know, and we'll move you up to the front of the list. And I think we had maybe one person that was going to impact, so we'll make sure that we get that testimony in first. So if anybody else has an issue, either let one of the staff know or just let me know and raise your hand and we'll take care of that. I'd like to do introductions so those of you in the audience know who our committee members are. We also have some guests this evening. I also wanted to announce that Senator Betsy Johnson called this afternoon. She had planned on being here and was not able to be here, but she is represented tonight by her staff, who is where is she going?
I'll represent her.
Where is she? She was here. I think she will probably be back because she's here to represent Senator Johnson this evening. So, Ms. Barbara Smith-Warner, would you like to begin introductions, please?
Why, thank you. Hi, thank you for having us today. My name is Barbara Smith-Warner, and I represent House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
I'm Andy Olson, State Representative from the Albany area.
I'm Susan McLean from House District 29, which is West Washington County.
I'm John Lively from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield.
I'm Cliff Benz from House District 60, which is the southeast one-third of Oregon.
And I'm David Gomberg from House District 10, not a formal member of the committee, but was invited to sit in here when they gather in our very own House District 10. I represent from Yahats to Tillamook. They've got me sitting here on the edge of the table. I'm almost out of my district.
And I'm Senator Arnie Roblin. David is half of my district. Catty McEwen is the other half of the district. So we go from the bridge at Charleston to 3rd Street in Tillamook and over into the valley in Fall City and Sheridan. So I allow one of the other senators to go through my district to get here back and forth twice.
Chris Edwards, State Senator representing Eugene and Junction City.
Senator Fred Girard, I represent rural Clackamas, Marion, and Linn counties. For you that think that Newport is a small town, I'm from the big city of Lyons, and I can tell that hardly anybody knows where that's at, so I'll help you. It's right across the bridge from Mahama. I have 18 little cities, and they're all pretty small.
I'm Senator Brian Bocas, District 12. I have the other half of the Willamette Valley and your end of Highway 20 and your end of Highway 18. And, yes, I did come through Arnie's district three times on the way down here and back to my own.
Hi, I'm Lee Byer, and I represent Central Lane and Linn Counties in the State Senate, and I'm co-chair of this committee.
And I am Catty McEwen. Again, I represent House District 9. I go from the border with Representative Gomberg at the northern edge of Yahats, as Senator Roblin indicated, to the Charleston Bridge and south of Coos Bay to Millington and almost into Elmira, where I actually have five voters, kind of an L-shaped district. I have four ports, three tribes, and a district that as we all are, exposed to a lot of water. So happy to be here. We have we have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven people on our list to testify tonight, which is gives us a lot of latitude, which we usually don't have at these meetings. So normally we have 3 minutes per testimony. I think we're going to increase that to five tonight. And I'd like to start out calling up first Mr. Doug Cooper, who I believe has a Highway 20 issue. So Mr. Cooper, if you'd like to join us first, we'll let you kick us off, and then we'll move along with the rest of the panel. So thank you so much for being here today. Please, and if anyone has written testimony they would like to submit, please give it to the wonderful staff that has brought all this equipment out here so that this event can be broadcast. And all of these will be put into the public record. You'll be able to see all of this on the Oregon Legislative Information System within a short period of time. So anything written that you have that you would like to submit, please do. Please begin, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. I think I'm going to be well ahead of the Highway 20 closure. So, but thanks for the consideration. So thank you, co-chairs, and all the committee members. My name is Doug Cooper. I'm vice president of resources for Hampton Lumber Mills. Hampton's a family-owned company headquartered in Portland, Oregon. We operate sawmills in the coastal communities of Tillamook and Warrenton, and we also have a sawmill currently operating and has been for a long time in Willamina. We recently purchased a sawmill that was down, but we're going to be restarting in Banks, Oregon. All of these mills are dependent upon a stable and reliable timber supply and a reliable transportation network to assure those logs reach the mills. As well, the finished products also rely on a stable and safe environmental sound transportation system. We encourage the panel to ensure transportation investments linked to broader statewide economic priorities, including infrastructure and transportation projects that enable and enhance domestic manufacturing. The backbone of the state's employment and economy. Local Oregon sawmills are running below capacity, and the state should not use public funds to support the export of raw logs to Asia, which would cause further cutbacks in local manufacturing and jobs. Rather, we strongly support the prioritization of maintenance and repair projects for existing road and rail systems to ensure materials and products can be cost-effectively transported to and from Oregon manufacturing operations. I urge the panel to invest in our own current system before embarking on large investments in new facilities that will compete with existing facilities and create additional economic stresses on Oregon's economy and transportation systems. Container capacity at the Port of Portland was key to our ability to effectively and efficiently access global markets. Loss of that capacity forced the company to send upwards of 1,000 containers of finished products per month, each month, to ports in Tacoma and Seattle. Running additional trucks on that segment of I-5 is expensive, adds to congestion, and increases the carbon emissions of the complete transportation delivery to the end-use customer. For our sawmills in the North Coast and Willamette Valley, the Portland Port Network is the best long-term option for access to international markets and future container shipping capacities. We urge the legislature to continue to find ways to support the Port of Portland in its efforts to restore container capacity and expand port opportunities. Finally, we support the enhancement of short-line rail capacity and transload facilities as part of a long-term, multifaceted solution to reduce congestion through the I-5 corridor. As we rely heavily on rural highway systems, we support investments in maintenance and improvement projects, specifically to improve capacity and ensure safety on Highway 26, Highway 30, and Highway 6, which serve our mills, which are critical to our ability to access domestic and international markets, and are under additional stress as tourism traffic to and from the coast has increased in recent years. I appreciate your time, and thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Any questions for Mr. Cooper?
Normally,
we're very time constrained, and tonight we're not, so this is rather
that.
Unusual.
Just a quick question. The 1,000 containers that you say you're shipping through the Puget Sound area now, are those all going by truck? And if so, why not rail? What's the problem there?
It's actually been more cost-effective for us to ship by truck.
Really?
Rather than going by the offloading and rail.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
How many people do you employ?
At our three Oregon mills and associated offices, we have over 600. And we also have three sawmills in forest land in Washington and two sawmills in British Columbia. So in total, close to 1,500.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was an interesting concept that came up in Bend where folks explained to us how they had been a public-private partnership put together many years ago to put the main road right through the middle of it, which you never see. And what had happened is folks that wanted to develop land worked with the state to develop the road, and eventually it was put in. If we were able to sort out how logistically we could save you money by moving logs, would corporations such as yours be interested in such partnerships?
I would expect so. It sounds like if it's a good return on investment, we should be interested in doing that, of course.
And I guess I'll go one notch further and ask, what would it take to actually use a transload facility? Are we? What are you missing to put those cans on a rail car and get them to Tacoma?
We do some of that. So we do have reloads ourselves where we are shipping onto or transloading onto rail systems. What's missing probably in terms of going up to that Seattle-Tacoma location is it frankly just isn't quite that far. So where we're shipping, transloading onto rail cars, it's going greater distances.
South?
We do ship some south, yes.
Oakland, LA, mm-hmm. Long Beach?
All the way down to Long Beach, yes.
All right. Yes, sir.
Some of us are really trying to develop the port of Coos Bay. If we got that so that it was a little easier to ship out of, would that be an option for you in some of these mills or not?
Probably not. Just, I'll speak for our mills, which are located on the North Coast. So I shouldn't speak for anything south of there. But for us, we found it's more cost-effective to go to the Port of Portland. Of course, that's been lost, but that's why we're supportive of increasing the opportunity to regain shipping there. Going south to the smaller ports, what we found in the past is that it was not as cost-effective, and we don't believe it would be with the shipping rates and still truck rates that we have with backhaul opportunities going up and down I-5.
I want to follow up on that question.
To your
benefit, Madam Chair. I'm not as optimistic with the Port of Portland. It's 82.3 miles of steaming each direction. You see where Hanjin is right now. They're seizing ships in multiple ports. Bankruptcy court just today has, stopped that. But the bottom line is the future is probably going to be closer to the coast. So let me rephrase his question. If there was a container, Port of Portland was not shipping, because mm-hmm. nobody in their right mind is going to bring a ship up there mm-hmm. at this point in the economy. But if there was a container shipping operation and being serviced by international shipping companies out of Coos Bay, would it be more cost-effective for you to go to Coos Bay or more cost-effective to send it to Tacoma?
I can't tell you that. I shouldn't even try to make that judgment. I don't know what the actual rates would be and what the shipping rates versus the truck rates down to Coos Bay. Plus, I'm not a transportation expert, so I'm on the resource side. But certainly the availability of containers is an issue. So in some of the smaller ports where the empty containers that need to come in so that they can then go back to that port, you have to have something being shipped out as well. So there could be the transload there at the port facility, but then you run into that trucking distance. Similar to what I mentioned, it's actually a relatively cheap rate going up by five.
Thank you, sir. Any more questions? We appreciate you being here tonight, and we hope you make a run for the East.
Oh, I think I've got it beat.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Next on our list, we have Jonathan Wright, City of Reedsport, and Fiona Bai from the Port of Coos Bay. Please come up and sit. Yeah. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I believe you have at your desk, committee members, some handouts that Mr. Wright has brought.
Those of you who know me know that I come bearing all kinds of handouts normally, because when you leave here, I want you to remember who I am, if not by my long-winded presentation, but by the fact that you have materials in your possession that whenever you get bored at a stoplight or you're sitting there enjoying your Starbucks, you can go, maybe I'll check out what he presented. Jonathan Wright, City of Reedsport. I was told a couple hours ago that this was going on, so I threw together a PowerPoint presentation and ran up the hill. And one of the things, and we heard a lot of conversation just a little while ago. Oh, there it went. There we go, we're back. About the need for infrastructure improvements, mainly bridges, along the Oregon coast. And when you listen to the different cities, a lot of them talk about the isolation of a community. I have even different of a scenario because my isolation is actually in the middle of my town. And so we have a bridge there that was built in 1928. And at this point, it is degraded to the point where it is becoming a flood hazard because we are protected by a levee, and I'll go into that in a minute, and also because of its seismic vulnerability. And all of the stuff that I have in this PowerPoint is also supported by this. We had a BCA done in 2015. I don't know how many of you are familiar with FEMA grants, but if you're applying, you have to have a BCA. You have to have a BCA of at least one. And if you look in there, the BCA for this bridge is over four. So we have all the hazards that you're already aware of, so we won't go into that. Here is the town of Reedsport. You have the downtown area and the uptown. Now, does this have a pointer on it? Probably doesn't. The uptown area, it's hard to see, but if you're following along the PowerPoint, the hospital's uptown, all of the food caches are uptown, the emergency operations center's uptown, the long-term and short-term emergency housing is uptown, and downtown, we have the majority of our low-income and disabled and elderly folks. What you see, the hash marks there, are all the properties down there that have an assessed value of $100,000 or less. And so those are all of our low-income folks. Those are our subsidized housing areas. We have two significant-sized mobile home parks there that are mainly comprised of retirees. And so when you look at, let's say, even a Cascadia event or even a flood event, that could jeopardize this bridge, I have no way to get those folks to emergency services. During a Cascadia event, you're talking about Highway 38. I don't know if you remember, it was probably 10 years ago, they were trying to call it the Highway of Death, and we went, no, you can't do that, because that just brings a bad stigma. But things constantly fall onto the road. According to the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, there is a lot of potential landslide areas there. And of course, like everybody, we're surrounded by bridges. So not only are we gonna be internally isolated, but we'll be externally. Right now, my main concern is getting these folks to safety. Also, the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries provided this, social vulnerability based on incomes. That's just supporting some of the information that I already put forward there. Here is an actual, the as-built design of the bridge. I was gonna start out with how many people have wooden bridges still in their town, but then I hear that there's actually one around here. So, yeah, so that shot my opener.
For the record, I have a bunch of covered bridges. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, are they used on Highway 101? So here you can actually see the infrastructure. This is the bridge itself. There is a municipal water line hung off of it. It's over 300 feet long. It is bridge on span. So anybody that's aware of what that means is they basically put the pilings up and then they place the bridge segments over the top, and they're held together by pins. Their seismic vulnerability is extreme. And this one, of course, is quite a few years old. So what we're dealing with here is settlement and degradation to the pilings, the bridge abutments. So see the circles there? So as this thing settles, you can jack it back up by jamming shims underneath it. And it's still created some significant areas of where it's actually separating because the bridge is going into the creek. So recently, we have a levee that protects our downtown. The segment there, and I have a circle around the alignment. When we did the survey work, it turns out that that section itself is one of our lowest points in the levee, and now we're being told by FEMA that we are going to have to sandbag that. So during a high water event, we will have to close the highway, which, again, you have all the vulnerable population down there. I can no longer get EMS. I can no longer get services down there just for a high water event. We're not talking about Cascadia at this point. Okay, so there's some facts there from the BCA. Road closure would be around 3 months. It would take us around 25 days to restore water to the downtown there. And then the total in damages and losses would be about $50 million. All that is in there. There's also an assessment of the bridge. I'll go to the packet real quick. The benefit cost analysis in its entirety is in there. That's also contained within our FEMA-adopted natural hazard mitigation plan. Bridge risk assessment was actually done and independent, and it identifies that it's extremely vulnerable to not only seismic events but high water events. And then, of course, we have maps, supporting documents, and all those fun pictures I already showed you. And there's the cost replacement. My time's up.
Questions for Jonathan?
That's a good presentation.
I was impressed how fast you got through a lot of information. when you started, I thought, oh, this is going to be like 15 minutes.
So tomorrow.
Thank you.
So tomorrow, when you're sitting there at Starbucks, you can go, well, okay, look at this.
Dutch Brothers, not Starbucks.
Dutch Brothers, whatever you're...
Question? Sure, Madam Chair.
Yes.
So I'm just struck by this, again, because we have a math teacher at the table. One of the things that replacement of the bridge would cause a nearly 100% increase in recovery time. That just seems like a very, so you would not have any recovery time? Like it immediately would be fixed because the idea is that it wouldn't, nothing would happen?
No, the
idea. So like all bad things would be mitigated and so you would.
Again, I threw this together quite fast. Representative Warner, what that means is that we would actually be able to access the downtown to begin recovery efforts. There would be literally no time lost.
Thank you.
If you have been through Reedsport, you realize that the grade is quite high. It's a very extreme slope. The upland area is very distinct from the downtown, which is our low-lying area and which is fully developed. So, about 1,400 people, roughly.
We're also working on the dike that goes all the way around. As you know, the Corps of Engineers, which helped build it, doesn't do that anymore. So that becomes the responsibility of the community. And as you saw, the lower area, all of it basically floods if the dike gives out. And all of this was built on ground that it's really hard to find any place to drive a pile to because it just keeps going forever. And so they have actually slowly started to sink, the same as the bridge has sunk on the one end. Where it is most likely. And so we're looking at trying to figure out ways to fix that as well. And they've done a good job of getting money so that they actually have done the engineering and found out what they'll have to do, including one whole area next to the bridge, just above the bridge, that's sheet piling was put down to keep it because they didn't have enough room to build the dike. And they didn't drive it very deep, so it's not even as deep as the bottom of the river. So everybody's surprised that it's still standing.
Yeah, it's... Concerning when your engineer comes out and goes, I don't understand why this hasn't fallen over in the mud yet. So far, it hasn't.
So we're looking at something to deal with the dike stuff as well. And if you're on the coast, it hasn't come up here, but if you want to ask them what they think about the federal government's new ideas with regard to floodplain, they all have ideas to throw into you to tell you why that's a problem. Not your problem, but it is a problem.
It's a good point, Senator Roblin. This is actually part of our flood fighting device. It is part of our levee. The end abutment is our levee, and it is settled to the point. Again, we'd have to sandbag it.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Bai, welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Byer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Fiona Bai, and I'm representing the International Port of Coos Bay. And relaying the message prepared from our Chief Executive Officer, John Burns. So first of all, we just want to start off thanking you for your time and also your past support of our port. With your help, we were able to purchase and restore the South Coast Rail Link connecting Coos Bay to Oregon, and your letters of recommendation for state and federal grants have made a huge difference in our ability to secure these funds. We are working hard to ensure we are taking care of and updating our infrastructure while at the same time looking forward to the future to take advantage of the unique potential of our port on the South Coast. My goals today in being here are to tell you about what we have accomplished, describe our challenges, and outline our needs moving forward. I also hope in doing so I will be able to share how our past actions have resulted in tangible results and are confident with your help will be a boost to our local economy and the entire state in the future. The strength of Southwest Oregon's economy is directly tied to our port, and the future health of our port will be dictated by whether the multimodal infrastructure supporting our maritime, rail, and marina is sound for years to come. So let's first begin with a brief update on the Charleston Marina. The port-owned Charleston Marina Complex supports the commercial and recreational fishing fleet. Just last year, the commercial fleet landed a total of 20.8 million pounds, a $21.6 million value, according to ODFW. Our facilities like the shipyard, ice plant, and future fish processing and cold storage facility, Point Adams, help support the commercial and recreational fishing industry that is so vital to the Charleston economy. Aging infrastructure of the shipyard and buildings like Point Adams, however, require investment in major infrastructure improvements in order to continue to support the commercial and recreational activities in Charleston. We understand that our fishermen are suffering, which is why we are working to improve the infrastructure in the marina. Second, the Coos Bay Rail Line. The port has made significant progress since the shutdown of the rail line in 2007 and since our purchase of the line in 2009. Since the purchase, we've made a number of improvements, and by 2012, we're able to get 2,480 rail cars on the line. And today, we have tripled our 2012 numbers and are close to 7,500 rail cars per year, providing over $100 million to the local economy in payroll, goods, and services. Furthermore, this increased use of the rail has resulted in about 24,500 truckloads off the highway each year, reducing emissions and saving costs in road maintenance. This success, however, would not be possible without the state and federal grants like Connect Oregon 3 and Tiger 2, allowing us to rehabilitate the line, including tunnel and bridge repairs, upgraded electrical system, and rail ties and ballasts along the entire line. With your help this year, we were able to use $8.5 million in state funding, which is made up of $2 million from the Connect Oregon 5 grant, $6 million from ODOT lottery bonds, and $500,000 in the form of a loan from the Business Oregon Infrastructure Finance Authority. With this money, we were able to leverage an additional $11 million of federal funding from the Fastlane grant for tunnel rehabilitation. Tunnel rehabilitation project is really important, as it will add 20 years to the tunnels, the majority of which are over 100 years old. Prior to initiating our tunnel rehabilitation work, the conditions of the tunnel were so poor, it was one of the reasons for shutting down the line in 2007. At this point of the project, we will likely start tunnel drainage construction next year, and I will submit to you that thus far this project has been successful. We will need to continue to make more investments into the future to complete the rehabilitation of all areas of the rail line, and I feel strongly we have optimized the resources we have and have made significant gains with our strategic use of those funds. We feel it is important for the state to continue programs like Connect Oregon that gives opportunities to communities like ours. Lastly, our maritime operations. The port has seen better days. In 1995, the Coos Bay Harbor had 238 vessel calls and 9 active terminals, both barge and beach draft. A decade later, we are down to 54 vessel calls and 4 active marine terminals. One of the ways to reverse this downside is the channel deepening project. The channel deepening project is a great example of a public-private partnership formed between the port, the state, and current and future business constituents such as Jordan Coval LNG and Roseburg Forest Products. This project could increase cargo tonnage exported out of the port from the current 2 million to 8 million tons with just the implementation of the Jordan Cove LNG terminal alone. By increasing the depth and width of our current channel, we will have more opportunity to have bulk carriers enter our port and develop more public-private partnership projects which can further the infrastructure for deep water navigation channel and rail access. The project would also provide more robust jetties at the entrance of the channel, ensuring easier and safer travel of vessels for our pilots. Currently, the channel deepening project is set to begin during the fourth quarter of 2019, and we expect this work to conclude in 2022. Thank you for your past support in these efforts, and we look forward to our continued partnership as we work toward completing this important project. Looking toward the future, I believe the Port of Coos Bay is and can be a connection point for intermodal transportation by sea, by rail, and by road. Its development is not only vital to our local community, but I believe for the entire state. Expanding the rail line and maritime operations capacity will enhance the state's intermodal capabilities, create family wage jobs, and provide business development opportunities, enhancing Oregon's economy. Most importantly, it will allow us to help our farmers, our loggers, our fishermen, and other constituents to get Oregon products out to the state, the nation, and the world. Our port has such potential, but we need the state's ongoing support to help us attend to aging infrastructure, like in the marina and on the rail line, and pursue capital improvement projects to further the infrastructure capabilities of our multimodal connection point. I'd like to thank you again for your time. Though the testimony today was certainly not all-encompassing, my hope is I have been able to show how much your help has meant to us in the past, what we've been able to do with your support, and how we can continue to grow and have more successes in the future. You all have a huge task as you look at the transportation needs of our state in the process of trying to put a transportation package together for a 2017 legislature. And if the Port of Coos Bay can help with any of that, we are happy to do so. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, I have a couple comments. One is, as you've probably already heard, I really like the Port of Coos Bay. We've been very supportive in the past for rail improvements, dredging, et cetera. The Port of Portland, I just did a tour up there, and as the good senator to my right, labor has become such an issue up there that it really no longer is a dependable port. The comment that I would make is, I know you're going to want more dredging dollars. You're always going to want something from capital construction. Get long-term contracts for your labor. And then if you can, get someone from the longshoremen to come up that's representing the longshoremen and say, hey, we want this port to thrive. These are, you know, we support the port in every way. Because if you have dependability, I think it'll be a lot easier to sell the Port of Depot Bay than it's ever been.
Questions, comments?
Thank you, Ms. Bai. And if you'd like, you may submit that written testimony to the staff.
Oh,
it's already. Okay, great. Thank you. Next up we have, please, Mr. Bowman. And I'll also call up Kevin Greenwood, please.
Betsy and I had this come from.
Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to our committee.
Yeah. My name's David Bowman. I'm a resident of Depot Bay. And the one thing I hadn't planned on commenting tonight, but I sat through your meeting previously, the one thing that wasn't shown was the data. The very last comments in your meeting was about data. The Department of Transportation has such a varied and wide amount of transportation data available to you to make these decisions that you are going to be required to make. You know, on behalf of the people of the state, you are going to be setting how our transportation system works. And it's so important that especially the Department of Transportation gets information to you that has to do with intermodal. I mean, when I drive into the valley, I-5, probably 20 to 25% of the traffic is truck traffic, and I don't know what percentage of that is interstate, but I am guessing a large portion of it is interstate. And until you address the intermodal, how to get those off the roads on I-5, 97, 84, you know, that is a big portion of where the bottleneck is. You get one truck doing 55, another truck doing 60. Just the time to pass for a car behind them doing 65, it just shuts the freeway down. And, you know, that is one of the biggest problems you have in the valley. I know there's been items addressed as to having an alternate route, and I'd heard some mention of 99 West, but that's not an option. I mean, unless you're going to build a brand new road from, you know, Eugene to St. Helens or somewhere up there, 99 isn't an option for for getting traffic off of Interstate 5. And one thing here on the coast that hasn't been addressed is the problems with our estuaries. I drive past Siletz Bay every day, sometimes, less than that. But the level of the silt in Siletz Bay is going to become a very big problem very soon. This last year, it was within inches of going onto Highway 101. This last year, there used to be solid channels for water to run around through the bay. There isn't anymore. The level of the bay does not allow for the circulation anymore. And in so being, and I'm sure it's the same in other bays, Coos Bay probably, that it's going to cause flooding, and there's no two ways around it. So especially in the estuaries, that aren't bays, that you don't dredge, Highway 101 is going to become a major problem, as it has in Seaside, and you've made some progress on changing that. And one point on maintenance. Someone needs to be responsible that when maintenance is done, it's done correctly. I heard somebody mention the Spencer Creek Bridge earlier today. The Spencer Creek Bridge is a great example on how something was not done right. I was involved with the Job Corps here in the county, and they did some repair work on masonry at our Veterans Memorial. The job that they did is 100% better than the job that was done on the Spencer Creek Bridge. With that, I'll end my comments.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Welcome.
All right. Am I your last speaker?
Got a couple more after.
Okay. All right. Great.
Two more.
Well, Chairs McCowan and Beyer, thank you for coming.
Sorry, it's McEwen. Once it gets out there wrong, I can't
stop
it.
Just checking.
Appreciate that. You're perfectly fine. You get a pass. Oh,
thank you very much. Appreciate that. Appreciate everybody's effort to come down to Newport. This is a great opportunity to talk about Highway 20 and the great work that ODOT is about.
For the record, your name, please.
Sure, absolutely. My name is Kevin Greenwood. I'm the general manager at the Port of Newport.
Thank you.
And I'm also the president of the Oregon Public Ports Association. So I do want to thank your support for following through on to get this US 20 project complete. I think that's going to do a lot for the community of Newport. I think lifting of the truck restrictions for travel from I-5 to 101 is going to be a huge advantage to providing safe and efficient transportation across the coast range. And I know it's been a long process, and I really appreciate everything you've done to make sure that that gets completed. I also want to thank Senator Roblin and Representative Gomberg for all of your support on the Port of Newport's transportation efforts. Honestly, I think if it wasn't for your assistance and help, I think the Tiger Grant that the Port of Newport was successful in obtaining last year, we wouldn't have received that. And so I certainly do appreciate your support. The $2 million Tiger Grant actually was going to build a international terminal shipping facility on the 40-acre McLean Point site, which is the site of the old two sunken World War II concrete vessels. The project overall, the first two phases of this project, it was a $28 million project that included $15 million of general obligation bonds voted by the citizens of Newport. This last shipping facility that we have begun to complete the financing on will allow us to have a yard where products can come to Newport from the surrounding area, be consolidated, and then shipped out on handy-sized Handymax vessels. We're down to 35 feet. We've got the berth dredging. We have everything that we need to ship out in and out of Yaquina Bay, except for a consolidation yard. And so we do have a proposal that has that we're continuing to get financing on. The only thing I would challenge the committee to consider is, and I'll use a term that Senator Johnson uses, and that's the idea of being commodity agnostic. And I think that some of the infrastructure, at least in Newport, is going to provide opportunities for waste paper products, recyclable paper from Southern California to come into Yaquina Bay that could then be delivered to GP in Toledo. There's also some opportunities for forage and hay and straw to be break bulk out of Newport. To be clear, the port did complete a feasibility study just in June, and we looked at a lot of the other commodities that had been shipped out of the Port of Portland, and Port of Newport is certainly not going to fill that void. And I want to be very clear that that's not our, not where we're looking at. But there still are products that can be shipped out of Newport that will provide a huge amount of savings to those businesses, in addition to eliminating hundreds of thousands of truck miles from the state and federal highway system annually. So I think that that's a project that we're going to continue to advocate for. Again, Senator Roblin, Representative Gomberg, I know that you're helping us with that effort, and whatever I can do to help make that case, I will certainly do. I think another issue is there is not a toll lane on the Oregon highway system for products that certain folks might not care for. And I think that we shouldn't apply that same methodology to the state's terminals, wharfs, rail systems. Those are should be viewed equal to the state highway system. And so to penalize a marine infrastructure project because of concerns of specific commodities when there's a wide range of commodities that can come through these facilities is something that I hope that would be considered. I think that another project or another funding source that is huge is Connect Oregon. And I know that with ballot measure 97 coming up, and that's going to determine the future for any kind of transportation planning. But if for some reason that were to pass, you know, I think that looking back at the 2005 levels, the $100 million had been invested in Connect Oregon. And I think when you look at the other multimodal transit and bicycle infrastructure, I think that cries out even more for that increased level. So I think with that, ports have a very few opportunities to generate income and revenue. And so one other thing that I would leave you with, and it may not be specific to this committee, but looking at ways that port special districts can expand some of their revenue generation past purely property tax resources. Looking at some of the authorities that cities and counties have to generate additional income, being able to take advantage of some of those authorities, I think, is something that I think OPPA would like to talk to the legislature about. And Mark Lander, our executive director, has been very active in doing so. So with that, I'm certainly interested in answering any questions that you might have. And thank you for the opportunity. Thank I'll you get your name right next time. Sorry, Caddy.
Happens all the time. It. You're one of many. Yes, Senator.
So could you decode what you were saying? You talked a lot about commodity, being commodity agnostic. Are we talking about raw log exports? Is that what?
Yeah, I think that's been. I think that's the biggest concern. I think from certainly Hampton, I would say that one of the other issues is we just recently lost a red cedar mill in Philomath, Mary's River. If our facility had been in place, we could have actually saved Mary's River considerable transportation costs by importing cedar from either Alaska or British Columbia. So those are the types of opportunities that could come through this facility besides just log exports.
Ms. Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should know this, but I do not. How many ports are there total in Oregon?
There's 23 ORS 777 ports and one 778 port of Portland.
Thank you.
Representative Gomber.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair. And thank you, Mr. Greenwood, for your compliments today. You're absolutely right. We need to move this port project across the finish line. It's going to provide some incredible opportunities here on the Central Coast in a variety of economic venues. But I wanted to focus in on a point you made about lifting the truck restrictions on Highway 20. And, Madam Chair, earlier this committee heard a reference to highway congestion in Lincoln City. And for those of you that are going to be touring Highway 20 tomorrow, I wanted to point out that the new grade is going to allow truck traffic, which is currently unable to use the existing Highway 20 pathway. Trucks over 60 feet can't make the turns on the existing Highway 20. Now, what that means is that trucks that are bound for the mill in Toledo, the bayfront in Newport, or the port in Newport have to come around and go through Lincoln City, Depot Bay, downtown Newport, which is a huge contributor to the kind of congestion that we're talking about. And when Mr. Greenwood makes reference to lifting the restrictions on truck traffic, it's going to have a huge positive impact out here.
Thank you, Mr. Greenwood.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Next up, I think we'll just finish up. We'll have a panel of three. We have Selena Kelly and Caroline Bauman and David Brocksmith, please. And if anyone else would like to testify, we're just at lightning speed today. Either check with the staff sitting outside, or when we're finished with this panel, just feel free to come forward. We'd love to have you on the record. Welcome. In any order you choose.
Okay. I'm Caroline Bauman, and I'm with the Economic Development Alliance of Lincoln County. And I welcome you meeting here, and we're very happy to have you here. When I was listening to the comments in the other room earlier, it really did impress me with the complexity of our transportation as a system. And what I'd like to do, I really only have one recommendation. I want to recommend that the committee members take a look at the Coastal Caucus Economic Summit that was held a little over a month ago, where there was a wonderful high-level discussion. Senator Johnson chaired it. And the takeaway that I had from that panel was that how much we need a system-wide approach, an approach that really reflects the complexity of this system. And just here in Lincoln County, a 100% rural area, we have all of the multimodal modes. And so I think this taking a system-wide approach to make sure that all of the different modes work with each other would be a good direction for this committee. The rail, we have rail all the way to Toledo, and we have customers using that rail. So this is something that Georgia Pacific and another mill use for shipping their products. And public transit, bicycle and pedestrian, and wanted to mention with regards to economic development how important bicycle and pedestrian systems are to tourism. We welcome and host a lot of European and Japanese and Asian tourists who are very interested in hiking, walking, trails, and bicycles. So those systems are important. Airports, We may not have commercial air service at our airport. However, our airport is used by private planes. It's used to move cargo using FedEx planes. And it's now being used for sightseeing excursions. So there's part of our tourism economy being supported, too, with our airport. And last but not least, waterborne commerce, which Kevin Greenwood just talked about. So I won't really talk about that, except just to mention this is another mode, the maritime industries. And I think this committee might be surprised about Lincoln County, small, rural, how much we actually export. Everything from a rogue ale beer in bottles to international destinations, seafood, and oysters going to Asian markets. We have a complex economy and we export a lot of products from here. We're a port of call for scientific research vessels, so we're actually welcoming international people through scientific vessels and fishing vessels that have international crews, and they're actually getting here by water. It's just one of the interesting complexities of our economy. So this system-wide approach is my main message, and I will write something up and submit it later.
Thank you so much.
My name is Selena Kelly. I am here about the Coquel Indian Tribe. I just want to ensure that when packages are coming up, that tribes are being considered. Like our tribe, we service people all over the state of Oregon. It's not just Coos County, which is where we are, where our main office is located. We have members everywhere, and we service all of our members. So we make sure that they're all taken care of, whether we are supplementing public transportation, whether we're using taxis, whatever we're doing, buying bicycles. We're making sure that people are able to get where they need to go, and just want to make sure that tribes are being considered.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thanks. Have any questions?
Coquel. They were our hosts for the economic summit. That's where we were. Yeah. And thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
It was a very busy few days.
Co-Chair
Mr.
McEwen.
Brocksmith, Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Representative Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Beyer. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you. I'm David Brocksmith, Curry County Commissioner, and also the Association of Oregon Counties District 4 Chair, representing Curry, Coos, Douglas, Jackson, and Josephine counties. Transportation on the south coast and southwest Oregon is, of course, essential for a number of reasons, as have already been spoken today. And so I don't know if I need to rehash all of those things. 101 is our lifeline, and our fishing communities are a staple workforce. For example, 35% of Port Orford's economy is based on those fishing dollars. And when you have a situation in Port Orford where more than 70% of our students are on free and reduced, and roughly 10% are homeless students, you're in a dire situation in need of public transit services. It's been spoke about earlier with regards to the Port of Portland. I can tell you that Southwest Oregon has hurt their economy, is hurting not being able to export out of the Port of Portland. Being able to export out of the Port of Coos Bay would be fantastic for our Southwest Oregon economies, especially since we did some work about a year and a half ago in getting a phytosanitary certification rule change with USDA so that we can actually get a certificate to export cranberries, blueberries, strawberries, and cherries in the state, which is a $208 million industry, and being able to export those out of the Port of Coos Bay closer to where they're grown rather than to Tacoma would be fantastic for those industries, considering that 99% of the cranberries are grown in Coos and Curry counties in Oregon. So when we're looking at packages, we need to understand, and I won't rehash what we did in the roundtable too much, but we need to understand that a lot of our coastal communities, especially the South Coast, they double in size during the summer months. And so we have a lot of those travelers, and we need to somehow figure out how we can pick up on those as well. We also need to realize that we have in our rural communities, especially in my county, Curry County and South County, for medical treatments, just to get to Coos Bay for cancer treatment, they're doing a 240-mile round trip just for service. And they have to do that once a day for weeks on end. And it is very costly for them. And lastly, I just want to thank you for the time and remind you that when you look at the investment that's made today, and this is something that all of you know, but just to put on the record, every dollar we invest today brings back and translates into a saving of $6 to $14 in the future. And when you're looking at the rural counties and such as those in my district, what you're looking at is the loss of SRS funding, which used to support our roads departments. And with that loss of that funding, Curry's fortunate that we had a roadmaster that was able to save those dollars. And they aren't going to last long as we're using them to fund public safety at this point, $1.83 million last year alone. We're going to need in a package something that will be long-term and something that can bring the counties more dollars, because when you look at the county road program is essential to making sure the state road program works. And so that those partnerships and relationships are important as we move forward, not only with the message as it was discussed earlier, but with those partnerships we can create better transportation opportunities for all our residents in Oregon.
Yes, Representative Benz.
Thank you. Perhaps you're aware of the Representative Witt is holding a hearing this Thursday on the impact that the Port of Portland is having on egg producers between 8 and 11 this coming Thursday, September 22nd. So if you could be up there to express what you just told us, that would be very good, or if you could send someone up.
No, I will be up at Legislative Days. Thank you for the information.
Right, it's a big deal for my area also because of the damage that's being done by virtue of the slowdown at the port. So it'd be great if you would be there.
What was it? Pardon me.
The committee is the House Egg Natural Resource Committee. The time is 8 to 11 on Thursday, the 22nd.
The questions for the commissioner.
Thank you, Representative.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we're about an hour ahead of schedule, so I would love to offer an opportunity for anyone else in the audience that would like to address the committee to please step forward. Welcome, Ms. Brown.
Good evening. My name is Julie Brown. Tonight I'm going to be wearing the hat, the Oregon Transit Association, and so Representative McEwen, Senator Byer, thank you for allowing me to speak, and also to the community. I didn't speak to you when you came to Medford because I thought it was important, really, that the people that live in the community should be the ones doing the speaking. But after the hearing, I really sat back and thought about what was it that the people missed out as far as being able to tell you their stories. And one of the things that I've been doing is touring the state as the new president of the Oregon Transit Association and talking with not only the users of the systems, but also the providers that provide that transportation. And sometimes that voice gets left out. The service that we provide, I believe, is as a public transit provider, is something that is likened to having a fire department, a police department. It is about quality of life for Oregonians. And I think sometimes we forget about what is public transit. We talk sometimes about congestion. We talk sometimes about people that need to get to work. But I think that the point that we miss is that there is a population that is totally transit dependent in our communities. And it doesn't matter if you're from a rural community or from a metropolitan area. And I just wanted tonight to let you know that transit is so important. The reason I believe so, and I'm so passionate about it, is that I have the privilege of being able to own a vehicle and have a driver's license, and I can go anywhere I need to go at any given time. But there are many, many Oregonians that don't have that option. Some are on Medicaid, some are on Medicare. Some just have also made a choice not to own a vehicle. And when we were in Eastern Oregon, we spoke with Senator Hansel. And one of the things that thought was very interesting was as the providers got up and spoke with him, they explained about their different services. And for some, it was for people that were elderly and disabled that needed to get to vital things. Others were just to get to grocery stores. But one provider stood up and said, I started a volunteer service that actually is helping commuters get to work. And Senator Hansel said something to me, said something to the group that I thought was interesting. He said, it's not the responsibility of the state of Oregon to get people to work. It's the responsibility of employers. And in some ways, I agree with him, but I believe that there are people that are just struggling. They're minimum wage workers. They can't own a car. They can't afford the insurance, all those things. We have a responsibility to help them. And so I hope as you put together your transportation package that you think about multimodalism, bicycling. There's many, many people. Every month we put over 4,000 bicycles on our buses in the Medford area that use part of the bus as their trip, and they put that bicycle on the rack. Recently, I was the chair of the Public Transit Advisory Committee to the Transportation Commission, and we sat down with the chair from Freight and the chair from the Bicycle Committee and started talking about how all of us are struggling and fighting over very small pots of money. And are we doing the best thing by doing that? And we all have made a decision that we want to work together. And so as I sat here and listened to the Port of Portland, or the problems with the Port of Portland and the ports, when I heard about the rail system, all of this is concerning to all of us. We're not so siloed that we don't care about the other modes. But as you're putting together your package, I want to really encourage you to remember transit and multimodalism, bicycling, pedestrian, all of those things. They all do go hand in hand, and they all do help each other. So I just wanted to thank you, and I just wanted to bring that voice, because one of the things that I noticed when some of the constituents talked to you was they really could not articulate what transit meant to them. And they kind of wandered off into different areas. But I can tell you, I'm the one that gets the phone call saying, I can't get grandma to the doctor. I can't get to school. I can't get to work. I had a lady call the other day and tell me that she worked for Harry and David's in Medford. They changed her shift, and she has to get on a bicycle and ride at 3 o'clock in the morning to get to Harry and David's, which was just, for her, she can't ride very fast. It was 10 miles away, and to be able to make her shift at 5. And was there anything I could do to get her a bus? And things like that just break your heart, because here's somebody who's really trying to make a difference in their life, and they can't. So thank you, and have a good evening.
Yes, question. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So one thing that would help would be the data, which I'm sure exists, that shows how many people we can keep in their homes and not into state-supported nursing homes by virtue of having transit. So we need those numbers.
Okay.
And some of these numbers came up when we dealt with Oregon Project Independence.
Yes.
And so, but that wasn't focused on transit. That was focused on keeping people in their homes. So if you can provide us with that link and that data, that not just with Medford, but the statewide, I'm sure it exists, but I haven't seen it recently.
And I will certainly look for it and try to find it. It sometimes gets buried in the weeds when you're talking about Department of Human Services, but I will work on it.
Okay, if I follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes,
so this is really important. The idea is that you get the idea.
You
can stay in your home because you can get on the bus, and you can go to the doctor, you can come back to your home. If you don't have the transit, you can't stay in your home, got to go on public aid. Now we need the measure.
I will certainly get that. And I will tell you that the Oregon Transportation Associations actually put together a report for you. And so that is not one of the areas we covered, but we still have time, so we'll get right on it.
Thank you.
Senator Robles.
Yeah, I just want to speak to that because my father, when he was getting older and decided he couldn't maintain his house anymore, got a rental place and with a lot of other people. And once he got there, and the bus stop, and this is in Washington, was right outside the door, He said, I'm getting rid of the car. I don't need this anymore. It wasn't a big issue for our family to have to fight over him not being able to drive and all that stuff. He just said, I'm giving this to my grandson. It's done. I don't need a car because I've got a transportation. And it made it possible for him and a whole lot of other people in that area. So Washington may have more information. They've got a much better transit system in little places. This is Port Angeles. It's smaller than, it's about the same size here. And I was shocked at how happy he was to have, you know, a regular bus schedule. He could figure out his day. He could go do all the things he wanted to do, and he didn't need a car. And I agree with you. If we can prove that this keeps people in control of their own lives without driving and without causing other problems that they did, it could be that could be a boon to making a reason why we have transit. I also met with a constituent the other day in Florence who got jury duty, and he is totally shook up because he wants to be a jurist, but the circuit court is in Eugene, and getting there is making him exceedingly nervous. I mean, he doesn't know how he's going to, he doesn't think he should be driving that far. Driving in town's okay, but driving that far, he gets very upset. He said, if there was transit, I'd love to go do my jury duty. I think it's a great thing, but driving that 100 miles, that 60 miles across and back, especially if it got late, I don't know how I do that. And we have some of these coastal communities like Lane and Douglas have a long way to their county stuff, and without transit, it makes it really hard for those people to continue to do those things. So I just want to pile on respect to what he's saying with regard to why that's a really important information to have to give the committee.
And Julie, you touched on something that's come up in the southern part of my district as well, are people who do shift work. And the bus doesn't run long enough duration during the day to get them either to work, they can't get home, or they can get home but they can't get to work because they can only cover one of the ends of what their shift is. So they have to take a cab or figure out another way. Cab's $8-$10, and that's a good chunk of what they're making with a minimum wage job. In a number of the things that we do. And it would be interesting to know if there are any statistics about kind of the duration of what's offered in smaller communities actually getting people to work and back.
And I think a lot of that depends on if the transit agency has actually done any surveying in their communities. And a lot of times it is only one or two people that run your transit system right. In that area, and it makes it very, very difficult. But with that said, in your area, just to let you know, recently four of the people from our region actually went over the general managers from the different transit agencies, one from Douglas County, one from Curry, Jackson, and Josephine. We all went over, and we're working with your transit manager to actually improve service over in your area, because we think it's important that everyone has that same availability of transit. And so that is one of the things the association's working on, and I think that some of the things that they need to think about is that multimodalism and carpooling or ride sharing and things like that. So those are being introduced by the Department of Transportation through small grants, but it takes a long time to get that movement. But I think that one of the things that all of these rural areas and these smaller urban areas are facing is that, you know, we have money that we receive from the federal government. We have money that we receive from our local area. We need that third leg of the stool, which is the state, to help out and boost us to that next level.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone else who would like to address the committee? Yes, sir. Welcome, sir.
Good evening. I'm Roy Kenyon. I'm the Public Works Director for Lincoln County. And I thought, well, while you were in town, I would
bend our ear.
Like Curry County, Lincoln County Road Department is in basically the same shape. You know, this is the crunch that we're in now was long time coming. We could see the writing on the wall. My predecessor, Jim Beisman, the Public Works Director then, did a good job of preparing us for where we're at now. Unfortunately, now we're at the point where we're going downhill faster than what we're able to take care of the road system. And we have half the crew, half the money, half the equipment, but we have the same amount of roads. And once the new alignment is opening on 20, we inherit another 7.5 miles of Highway 20. So I guess I'm just saying, you know, don't forget about us here in these our small counties. We get a smaller chunk of the pie than everybody else, and we're still trying to do the same jobs, same roads. I hear people talk about the ports and the rails, and it's all connected by county road systems. And so we'd like to be able to do our job, and if you can give us a hand, we'd really appreciate that.
Great. Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
Since you jumped in here, in your estimation in Lincoln County, because as you well know, and I'm just across the county line over here, so I'm quite familiar with your problems. When the weekend comes, as you know, your population just explodes, as you're well aware of. What percentage of traffic do you think on the county roads is actually what I guess we'd call tourist traffic? Because as you know, the gas tax is based on population and it's all divided out. So you're having to maintain roads for Portlandia, Salem, Eugene, every place else right. down here on the coast. Yeah, right. So in your, you know, you've been at this a long time. So in Lincoln County, what would you estimate the percentage of your road traffic is actually non-resident, you know, non-taxpaying individuals?
Well, it really depends on the part of the county. North County, Lincoln City, East Devils Lake Road, which is the bypass for downtown Lincoln City, is a county road. I would say at any given point in time, 75% to 80% of the traffic on that road is people trying to get from one end of town to the other so they can get up and down the coast. Here locally within the Newport area, it's not as extreme because we have Highway 20, Highway 101 pretty much intersect central Lincoln County, and so we have some scenic routes that we maintain. Yukuna Bay Road, I would say that probably 10-15% are people that are, you know, tourists. We also though maintain Ottercrest Loop, the loop around Cape Foulweather, and I would say probably there again it's a lot lower traffic density, but probably somewhere in the range of 80-90% of the traffic on it are tourists.
Thank you.
Further questions? All right, sir, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, unless there's any other brave soul out there who would like to come up and testify, anything for the good of the order?
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes, sir.
If I may, I started the evening by saying that that I'm not a formal member of the committee. I appreciate the courtesy of being allowed to join you at the table. But more important, I know this is the eighth meeting that this committee has had in different parts of the state, which means time away from your own district, time away from your jobs and your families. And I just wanted to thank all of you for that. Here in Lincoln County, here on the coast, we face unique challenges and unique opportunities. I think every part of the state could say the same thing. So we wish you well on this charge that you're approaching. It's a huge job. We all look forward to your recommendations, and thank you for your efforts.
Thank you, Representative Gomber.
Future vote.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
yes, we do. On that note, I believe we are adjourned.
Experienced hands.
I believe we are adjourned.
Experienced hands.